my sunglasses. I just don't yet have the courage. Don't have the courage yet. This is another thing. I'm thinking this whole week about this crazy mood I'm in and continue to be in. It's like I feel like the world is getting ready to crush, or wants to crush. If it's not getting ready to, it wants to crush me. And I feel like a little bug. And I think of, I like bugs. This is probably why I don't kill bugs. You see some bugs in Brazil once in a while, you know, little bugs. And I don't kill them. And I always say this. I said the bugs have families too. Bugs have families. And I think of that, what Jesus told Peter, that Satan desires to sift you like wheat. And I probably said this to you before, but it's being impressed on me again that we are so small relative to the size of the universe. And I hate that Kansas song, by the way. I hate that Kansas song, Dust in the Wind. All we are is dust in the wind. They're just... If I ever get to the place where I moan like that, I mean, I can see groaning. I can see being ticked off. I can see being blue. I can see being depressed. But all we are is dust in the wind, as if we're blowing aimlessly around. My God, if you get to that point, you're finished. Now, I love the Kansas song, Carry On My Wayward Son. Like that, Carry On My Wayward Son. Wayward sons, God brings us home. I'm all for that, but all we are is dust in the wind. Our days, come on, shut up, man. And yet, God makes us feel this way sometimes. We have to resist it. I got to fight this, feeling like a bug. But I know that Satan can sift me like wheat. And so I feel like I need to insulate myself from the world. Now, I've told you many times that Christ is our insulation. Maybe this is what I need to think about. I said that Christ is this insulating sheen. And yet, I'm only feeling safe these days when I'm ensconced in my little apartment with my bunker mate. So I like the place. I like this place because it's small. And as you know, I used to pursue camping, and I love to find the smallest tent I could possibly get because it always thrilled me in life to get smaller, not bigger, to see how little I could get by with. So I would get this little tiny tent and just get in there, and then I felt cozy. I'm the kind of guy, I'll turn on the fan, and I'll get under the covers. And I love this idea of being under the covers. And I remember when I was a kid, we had card tables, as most of you did, and I would put blankets over the card table and build forts. And then I would put the blankets, big blankets, then have a little light inside the tent, kind of like my little bunker light here. And I'd have a light. And then I felt cozy and safe and that nothing could get me. And the world seemed big and scary. And so I guess that feeling from childhood never left me. And I relate this now to Jesus saying to Peter, Satan longs to sift you like a grain of wheat, but I have prayed for you, Jesus told Peter. Well, we have something even better than Jesus praying for us. As great as that would be, have Jesus come down and say, I'm praying for you. We have even better thing, namely that Christ makes his home in us and he dwells in us and he's radiating out of us. So I don't know exactly why I'm going through this thing where I just want to be in a tiny place and hide. But if any of you are feeling that way, let me know. I might not answer because I'm not feeling very social. And if you've written me emails and I haven't responded, I apologize for that. It's just that I'm in this funkadelic. So we go to Revelation chapter 1, verse 1. Don't get excited. Or you can if you want. I don't care. You can get excited. I'm going to talk about the two words. You remember the structure. We have a structure in the book of Revelation in that things that are brought up at the beginning are brought up again at the end of the book. Now, as you see, I'm struggling. If you're watching me wrestle on the bunker cam, struggling with wrestling with my books here. The unveiling of Jesus Christ, which God gives to him to show to his slaves what must occur swiftly. That's it right now. I'm going to go to the last verse too. This is the unveiling of Jesus Christ. We've talked about that This is what he gives to his slaves concerning what must happen quickly. First of all, he gives this to his slaves. We are the slaves of Jesus Christ. I've told you that. It's a great comfort to know that we're the slaves of Jesus Christ, that we don't have our own, we don't do our own thing, we don't have our free wills, that God does things, and we are moved in Him. We live and move and are, Acts 17:25 or 24, somewhere around there. So he does tell his slaves what he's about to do. He told us his disciples were friends slash slaves, and he tells us his counsels. That's the first thing. Now, we're going to go on this into this in detail later, but he does this to show them what will occur swiftly. Now, there's a mistranslation here in the King James Version, which is deadly. Going to get into the mechanics of that later, but the King James says to show what must soon occur, quickly. I think it says quickly. But the word's not quickly, as though this stuff's going to happen soon after it was written. It happens swiftly. In other words, when it starts to happen, it's fast. You get that? When it starts to happen, it's fast. And again, we're going to look at parallel passages where this Greek word that was translated swiftly in the Concordant Version, other places this word is used. And we're going to find that this word swiftly is a correct word in the Concordant Version, and the word quickly gives a completely different meaning. If you don't yet appreciate the nuance there, you will when we get to this verse. So the word swiftly occurs at the beginning of Revelation. Now, watch what happens. Watch what happens at the end of the book of Revelation. Namely, chapter 22 and verse 20. Chapter 22, verse 20. He who is testifying these things is saying, yes, I am coming swiftly. Amen. Come, Lord Jesus. I am coming swiftly. So you say, big deal, Martin. It is a big deal. It's a big deal. First of all, when you realize that in the book of the unveiling of Jesus Christ, there is a structure. There is such a thing as structure. And then when you realize that the same word is mentioned at the beginning of the book and at the end of the book. These things must occur. When they occur, they're going to occur swiftly. And as I told you before, Jesus Christ is always swift in his judgment and lingering in his blessing. And so in case you've forgotten that, as you have read through the 22 chapters of the unveiling, we find again in chapter 22, and in the second to the last verse in our English versions, verse 20, he who is testifying these things is saying, yes, I am coming swiftly. The main accusation against God by people of oblivion, namely most of the inhabitants of the earth, is that where is he? He's left us on our own. He's gone. He is set the world into motion in the beginning, and now he's letting it go as it will. And when he sees someday that it gets out of hand, he's going to come back and correct course. Or he's going to fix it. He's going to be mad. Whatever. This is not true. Because he is always on it. Even when we see slowness. Or we see what we perceive to be a plodding pace. I tell you this. That God is swift. He is on it. He was never off of it. He is actively producing these things every day. Every day since Jesus left this earth, which I know it's been 2,000 years, every day something actively has happened to bring us to this day. Active. God is active. And you're only going to see that when you see the divine perspective, that God is actually not tardy. And when we read the letters of Paul, or when we read of the life of Christ, we're reading highlights. We're reading the cliff notes. And many, many details are left out. As one writer says, I think it was John, if everything that Jesus did was recorded, there would not be enough books, enough paper, enough parchment on the planet to record it all. So there's so much more, but every tiny detail contributes to the cliff note that you see. It takes all those details. We just don't mention them. I'll never forget Ernest Hemingway saying concerning his writing of Old Man and the Sea. He said, I knew so many things about the sea. He lived in Key West at the time. And he says, I know so many things about the sea. I know how the water looks at noon. I know how the water ripples. I know the sound of the hook when it goes into the water. I know the glimmer on the fin of a fish when it hits the boat. I know all these things. Therefore, I did not put them in the book. Therefore, I did not put those things in the book. But every single thing he knew about the sea, about how a fish looked, about how the ocean smelled, informed what he did write. What he did write consisted of and has to consist of all the details that he knew. Therefore, the crisis that the world is coming to, which when it happens is going to happen swiftly, this consists of every single event that has gone before. None of it is non-essential. And I know this is hard for you to believe because everything seems insignificant. Many things seem, not everything, but many things seem insignificant. But my God, when we look at this word swiftly and we realize that the beginning and the end is bookended that way, I'm going to extrapolate outward. I'm going to do something crazy here, which is not so crazy, and I'm going to take this, and I'm going to put the first quickly in the book of Genesis and the last one at the end of the book of Revelation. And I'll even go a step further, because that's what I do. I'm going to say the entire Aeonian times, the entire purpose of the eons, Ephesians 2:2, has been going productively, progressively, and in fact, in God's time, with great speed. So that when these things that are flashy happen, when Jesus Christ returns with a lightning bolt, and when the earthquake strikes, know that every single step man took, humanity took, while it was on this planet, contributes to what God does in the book of Revelation. Man must exhaust his resources. And to say that nothing's happening, my gosh, people, look out the window. And even if you see a guy walking down the street with a basket of apricots, it's happening. And it must happen. And it is producing the things we are seeing in the unveiling of Jesus Christ.